Rob Rowe with the Shapeshifting Reality podcast. Also working with Debbie Dashinger from the Dare to Dream podcast. This is part of our ongoing series with some of the leadership of Rythmia. We've had Dr. Jeff McNary on here, and we've also had JJ Mubarak. Both, I think, fantastic conversations. I hope you get to check those out. Hope you got a lot of good information there about the Rythmia Life Advancement Center. Let's call that for a reason. That's really what they do there. Yeah, we can learn more about that in other ways. There's a lot of stuff out there on Rythmia. I would highly advise you to check it out. They do Facebook Lives actually every week with different people, and they're all very worthwhile. They've all got a lot of good things to say. So I encourage you to take a listen there. This interview is with Christian Minson. Christian is a really interesting individual. He is highly trained in breath work, and he spent about 10 years as a monk. We'll learn a little bit about his background, his spiritual path in this interview, and really hope you enjoy this conversation. So please welcome Christian Minson of Rythmia. Hello, friends and listeners. This is Rob Rowe with the Shapeshifting Reality podcast, also working with Debbie Dashinger on the Dare to Dream podcast. I have the great honor to be here with Christian Minson of Rythmia. And Christian is a specialist and very highly trained in breath work, and also very well versed in all the modalities that Rythmia is well known for. Christian, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, as far as the breath work thing, it's going to be a little bit different of a conversation now that I am back from Rythmia. So I had absolutely one of the coolest weeks of my life, week before last, the 12th to the 19th. And I got to experience, I'm imagining what was part of the program that you designed and have implemented there at Rythmia, because you're like the head of breath work there, right?
Yeah, I've been the director of the breath work program for the last 2 years here at Rythmia. So the breath work here has been shaped by me somewhat. You know, it comes from my training and then just implementing things as need to be adjusted to fit the Rythmia framework.
Awesome. Well, for our listeners, let me tell you a little bit about what my experience was. Maybe we can, delve into a little bit of, what happened there. Maybe help me, integrate and understand what that experience was. Because my experiences, both of them, were very powerful. I had a really good breathwork session. I'd never done your type of breathwork before, although I've done a lot of things with the breath in terms of my own spiritual work. But mm-hmm. What happened with me on the first night, which was Sunday night, this is the night preceding the four plant medicine ceremonies in sequence. So I got the impression it was sort of a way of priming the pump, of getting us into a space to where when we do get into the medicine, we're more open and more able to receive it and have a little bit of understanding as sort of the breath work as, kind of a introduction. Is that kind of fair?
Well, that definitely is part of the equation here. So at the Rythmia, in the Rythmia program, we start off with a night or two of breath work as people arrive. Then you go through four nights of plant medicine, then a night or two of breath work as you depart. And the initial breath work is to do partially exactly what you said, to give people sort of a soft introduction, soft, relatively speaking, introduction into the transformative power of this program. As I often say in my introduction, the breath and the plant medicine are both like keys that unlock the doors to your consciousness.
Absolutely.
It's like the breath will unlock that door, and it smiles at you and gently beckons you in and has you sit down for tea. The plant medicine opens that door, and then when you're not looking, kicks your ass in there, locks the door, and doesn't come out for about 8 hours.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it.
So well, in that analogy, basically, the breath work then gives you a little bit more of a, as I say, a soft introduction into what kind of transformative experiences you can have. Now, at the end of the week, we use the breath work. And at that point, I reframe it a little bit. I ask people at the end of the week, so how many people felt like your breath experience was at least on par with your plant medicine experience? And literally half the room every time will raise their hand. and say that the breath work was as powerful as their plant medicine experience. Then I'll ask, how many of you felt that your breath experience was even more powerful than the plant medicine? And always half a dozen people raise their hand. So it's really, you know, we say the breath sort of introduces you to this, you know, the power of the plant medicine, but really it stands alone on its own as well. You know, I've offered breath work seminars where the only modality we're using is breath work. Twice a day, we're going through these intensive experiences, and people react the same way that they do when they're on plant medicine. You know, they get all flustered. They start, you know, they have to face themselves. Their darkness comes up to the surface, all the good news, so that we can actually work with it and release it. But, you know, breath is as powerful as the plant medicine.
Yeah, I can believe that. Let me be a little self-indulgent here for a minute. I'll tell you exactly, or not exactly, but a little bit of a synopsis of what I experienced on the first night, and then maybe the second night as well later. But for me, the breath work was extremely connected to the ayahuasca experiences, and they both drew upon each other. And since the ayahuasca experience, particularly Tuesday night, came 2 days after that, there were things that happened during the breath work that were directly referenced by my experience under the influence of the plant medicine. Mm-hmm. And the way that looked for me was, once I had basically done a certain number of the triple F breath, flow, full, and free, I think it is.
And free and flow, yeah.
And once I did enough of that, it was triggered. I didn't have to do any more. I was in the state. And what was happening, I was feeling a tremendous amount of energy flow throughout my body, and I could manipulate it with my hands. So I was, I don't know how it looked. It might have looked kind of crazy, but I was doing all these kind of energy dance, fluid motions like that with my hands. And if you're listening to you on the podcast, you know, good luck visualizing. But I would hold my hands maybe a few inches apart, and it would create a corridor. And it was a visual corridor, and I could put them to the sides of my head about like that, and it would open up a door. And through that door would come very interesting things. You know, perhaps a jaguar, perhaps a wolf, perhaps a human face that kind of equates to some of the ayahuasca art we see, where the goddess herself is depicted as a beautiful woman, maybe dressed in robes or vines or that sort of thing, you know, draped in, you know, some shamanistic accoutrements, feathers, beads, and so on. So I could bring those visions with some amount of direction. There was some spontaneity to it, but there was also some things that I could, okay, I want to see a little more of this, bring this to me. Very powerful experience. You find people experiencing that type of thing much, or is it just me?
Just you. No, of course. That's exactly the kind of experience that people have by and large. I mean, the experience is varied in the details, but basically it's an energetic experience. We're working directly with the life force energy. It's the life force energy, or prana, that's imbued in oxygen that is the medicine we're working with in this breathwork process. So in plant medicine, you're actually working with a liquid substance that's derived from plants and vines. But in breathwork, you're working with the medicine, but the medicine is the energy of life itself, the fundamental unit of life that you know, that has sparked us to be conscious, to be mobile, to be feeling beings, as opposed to just inert lumps of clay. So we're working with our original medicine in this, and it's no wonder that the experiences can be so profound. What's also interesting is that it's been shown that deep diaphragmatic and circular breathing can actually promote DMT to be released into the body system. Now, DMT is the chemical which is the active ingredient in ayahuasca. It's also naturally produced in our brain. So it is the chemical that's released when we dream. It's the chemical that's released when we have epiphanies or great awarenesses. So through this breathing, we're actually bringing DMT into our system. And that, you know, there again is a similarity between breathwork and plant medicine.
Absolutely. So how about the music? Were you involved in structuring this sequence of recorded music? Because I felt that was tremendously important to the whole experience.
Yeah, well, the music definitely is, I'd say the music is secondary to the medicine, right? You could have an ayahuasca journey without music completely and still go deep, but it is an adjunct. It helps guide the journey. And so, yes, it's important to pick music that helps guide it in the right way. And I've been instrumental in that.
Oh, very good. Yeah, well, good choices, because it definitely worked. The breath work experience that was on that backside of my week at Rhythmia, it was quite different. It was much more a physical sensation. After the initial sequence of the flow, full and free breaths, I found myself kind of in a state of vibration. It's quite interesting. Almost, if you've ever done those electro-stim machines where they put some electrodes on your abs, mm-hmm. all these crunches that, where you don't actually have to do sit-ups, that's what it felt like. It's quite interesting. So it really activated whatever electrical field was surrounding me and brought that electricity into my body to where I was actually feeling a sine wave at maybe, 8 hertz or something like that. You have almost like a machine, almost like the vibro plate they have over there in the gym at Rhythmia. You get reports of that sort of thing often at all?
Yes. whatever you want to throw at me, people have experienced. It's a very physical experience. At the fundamental, at our fundamental core, we're all energy, right? Science has even proven we're just energy. So we're really, again, we're working with the life force energy. We're activating energy. We're dredging up old stagnant energy that we've been holding on to or suppressing. So the whole experience is one of energetic stimulation. And you may feel that physically as energy, as physical sensations, as hot or cold. You may feel that emotionally, because emotions are energy. Emotions are just another form of energy. So if you're dredging up old sadness, you might cry, or old anger, you might want to yell or pound, as you may have experienced in the session. So yes, where people report all the time various physical sensations, various emotional sensations, and ultimately various spiritual sensations of connection, of bliss, of peace, of breathlessness, and again, all these are at their core refined energetic experiences.
Absolutely. So I don't want to make this all about me. We can come back to something else I think that was extremely interesting, the connection I mentioned between the breath work Sunday night and the plant medicine Tuesday night. There was something that happened very, very interesting to me that connected those two experiences. But first, I'd like to maybe shift gears a little bit, since you're obviously holding this position at Rhythmia. You're probably very much involved, along with the breathwork and plant medicine yourself. Do you mind? There's a reason I'm asking this, but do you mind if I ask how many plant ceremonies total you've participated in?
Well, I was just trying to tally that the other day. I think I've participated about 57 plant medicine ceremonies.
All right. That's pretty substantial. So one question I would have about that is, you probably had one set of spiritual beliefs. You seem like a guy who's been a spiritual seeker for many years of your life in some fashion. You probably had one set of spiritual structures in your life, if you will, before the first time you ever touched ayahuasca. And you probably have a different set of spiritual structures in your life now. Can you tell our listeners a little bit how your own personal spirituality may have evolved from that point to this point?
Yeah, well, I like to say life happens in cycles. And so a cycle is like a circle. It just keeps going around and around. Now, ideally, it keeps going around, and as it goes around, you're going up in a whole nother cycle. But for my life, yeah, I actually, my whole spiritual path was awakened through the experience of psychedelic medicine early in my life, around the last year of high school. Mm-hmm. And I'd have like what I call a God awakening experience, and looking into the sky, the clear blue sky, not a cloud in the sky, and on medicine, I was looking up, and in that moment, I felt God talking to me. There weren't any words, there wasn't any message, it was just this clear understanding that there was God, there was me, and we were all essentially one. And from that experience, that ignited something in me that really got me seeking all through college, and beyond, looking for a spiritual path, looking for the answers. Really, all my life I'd been wanting to know, you know, what the true meaning of life was, what the real purpose behind our existence was. But this just inflamed that quest, and it led me to the path of a spiritual master named Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote the book Autobiography of a Yogi, a spiritual classic that many people have started their spiritual journeys with, and it's led them deeper into their own spiritual path. Well, I ended up adopting that path and became a monk for 10 years of my life. So I really got that the purpose of life was our own evolution towards our self-realization or actualization of our full spiritual potential. And that the highest path to that was meditation, and the accompanying lifestyle points that helped support that path. And so becoming a monk was really the diving into a lifestyle that was wholly dedicated to this pursuit of our own self-realization and service to mankind in the betterment and enlightenment of the world. So that really, that was then medicine free. It was a yogic path, and in yoga, it's much more about discipline. It's much more about renunciation. So we didn't do plant medicine. We didn't do, you know, cannabis. We didn't do coffee even. You know, it was about being pure and clean and substance free. Now, I spent 10 years doing that. And then when I came out of the order, I learned breath work as a bridge of that spiritual path, a way to continue on the spiritual understanding that I had and bring lessons of spirituality to people in a more secular world, where you don't have to buy into religion, you don't have to subscribe yourself to a certain path, but really the spirituality of our own inherent self, which was accessible through the breath. And in fact, the meditation techniques that we practiced in the monastic order were actually just techniques of modified breathing, ways of manipulating the breath to get the energy to flow up and down the spine. So the breath was a perfect segue into the secular world and continuing to have an element of spirituality there. And as you would have it then, that breath work led me to rhythmia, because rhythmia, as we've been talking about, the cornerstones are breath work and plant medicine, and they needed a skilled and qualified breath worker back in early 2017. And the call came to me. I arrived there, and as I said, life goes full circle. Here I was primarily there to serve the medicine of breath work, but then was in an environment that I was very comfortable with, an environment that utilized plant medicine to help further people's conscious awareness. And so I kind of got back into that.
All right. So how would you describe your relationship to divinity at this point? It might be kind of a personal question, but if you don't mind, I mean, because I'm fascinated with the way that plant medicine helps us evolve those perceptions. Many people may come out of a patriarchal type religious situation. People might be an atheist. People come from all sorts of backgrounds. Somebody might be a Buddhist. But the plant medicine shows us a whole different side of divinity. Would you agree?
Well, I would agree completely. And again, like I said, in my original, you know, my original awakening was a paradigm shift of how present divinity was actually in my life and in all of our lives. To sort of answer this, I use a concept that was taught to me by my good friend and somebody I've been working with on a periodic basis now, Greg Braden, who's a thought leader out there in the world, you know, now does a television series on Gaia TV. Anyway, he puts this whole concept into two phases, awakening and mastery. All right, so when we have, largely people come to plant medicine and receive an awakening, meaning our paradigm gets shifted, our mind opens up, our box that we used to be in now is much larger. So we are redefining who we are in concept of this open awareness. It often clears, parts the clouds, gives us a clear view into, you know, ultimate reality before, you know, the clouds come back together or the sky, you know, the sky closes back up. So that's the awakening. The, you know, the real work then happens after that awakening. The mastery phase is really to take your awakening and continue to process it on a daily basis. And to do this requires discipline. It requires practices. It requires a constant revisiting of those concepts, of those awarenesses, to keep them in your lives. Otherwise, it's like an abandoned city in the jungle. And I use this well because here in Costa Rica, it's jungle. If you don't, you know, if you don't do anything to maintain a city, the jungle will come in and overtake that city in a matter of years. You won't even know that there used to be concrete and buildings there. So it's the same way with our consciousness. If we're not constantly maintaining our awakening and striving to live it on a daily basis, you know, the jungle of our old habits and our old thoughts is going to crowd in and take over once again. So my relationship with divinity is that it's a constant remembering, a constant reference back to the awakenings that I've received, not only in plant medicine, but in meditation and all the practices that I've done throughout life. And then attempting to apply them, you know, apply them on in the hard, cold light of day, as one of the saints that I've studied like to say. It's, you know, that is where it really makes a difference in your life. Anybody can have like an epiphany and be like, oh, I see, that's how I get it. You know, I understand that God is me and I'm God and all that. Then you go into your next day and you slander your neighbor and you talk bad to your wife and you beat your kids and all this. You're not getting it. You know, you might have got the epiphany, but now you have to put that epiphany into practice.
Absolutely. I would agree 100%. Yes. So there are some great points there. And one thing that I was really impressed with the structure of the classes in Rhythmia is that Rhythmia as an institution really cares. It's almost like a caring human being, but collectively everybody who works there really wants us to come back and succeed, really wants us to be a shining light as an example for the rest of humanity, to be come back and not only get elevated during that 1 week, but stay elevated and stay connected with that goddess energy or however you want to think of it. I that's how I'm thinking of it now because of experience I have. Maybe I'll run that by you here. But I don't think any reasonable person would suggest that plant medicine ceremonies in isolation are really much of a worthwhile path toward spirituality. I think most people would agree that it's part of an organized system of activity to keep ourselves, the way I think of it is keep ourselves in the medicine. That doesn't mean that we're constantly hallucinating, but we, for me, being in the medicine, that actually just that those four words came to me in a dream night before last. I was dreaming about some of my time there at Rythmia, and it's like the goddess left me with this message saying, Rob, be in the medicine. And for what that means to me is every breath I take, every step I take walking around, I have my guides with me, I have my companions, I have the goddess of, you know, represented by the feminine energy of ayahuasca itself, which most people would agree is indeed a feminine type of spirit. I feel all of those things with me constantly. And then as I continue to eat food very much in the vein of Rythmia, I actually end up getting Meg's cookbook. So I'm using a lot of the same food. I'm listening to some of the same music. There's all of these plant medicine based playlists out there on YouTube, etc. And I'm using those influences to basically just be in the medicine throughout my life. Even when I'm at my job doing, you know, secular, hardcore, financial type of work, there's a part of me that always will remember about what I experienced at Rythmia that is be in the medicine, be relaxed, be connected to your spiritual self. So any of our listeners, most of our listeners, I think, know something about Rythmia already. Either they've already been or they're thinking about coming. So what I'd like to say to all the people that are thinking about coming is that this is not a one-shot thing. This is a system of training that sets us up or is designed to set us up for absolute success in going out in the world to maintain calmness, to maintain an elevated vibration, to maintain kindness and compassion throughout our lives. So really want to honor the entire organization, all your colleagues for that, particularly the four main shamans. That's like a whole other subject. You know, Brad, Leo, Sarah, and Christian, the work those folks did, particularly on Thursday night, was absolutely amazing. So you folks have a whole system there of each component of it being very purposeful. So there's really no fluff. My sense is that every part of the whole system you folks have designed has had a lot of thought behind it, and it's therefore a very important purpose to give your guests something they can go back home with and make it a permanent part of their lives.
Well, let me say that you're right on there, and that your phrase to stay in the medicine, so to speak, is exactly what I'm saying when I talk about mastery, right? We have the awakening, and like I said, any isolated ayahuasca experience may give you a temporary insight and all that, but you know, our mind has a way of crowding back in if we don't have tools and we don't have support for keeping ourselves aligned with what just expanded, right? If it doesn't say expanded, it will contract again. And that's what the program at Rythmia really is uniquely designed, not only to give you the experience of the ayahuasca, but also to support you in that experience. Plenty of people to talk to debrief, to make sense of your downloads, to, you know, as a support network to lean on when you've had a rough night, which sometimes facing our inner darkness can be rough. And that's the good news ultimately, but it takes some fortitude, and it's great to have people to rely on. And a path, what are we supposed to do with this information? How are we supposed to move forward here? How do we reshape the way we're thinking to be able to include this new information? And that's all about what the Rythmia program is designed to do. And you mentioned about the people. I just want to touch on that I think it is the folks here at Rythmia that is the special ingredient, the secret sauce, if you will.
Absolutely.
There's something, and We could say, I mean, I've been here since close to the beginning, and I've watched how that the personnel has developed. And we could say on some level that Jerry maybe got lucky with how he also prides himself in being a good eye for picking out people. But I would say this, that this is the hallmark of something that really is here to stay, something that is divinely ordained versus a business that comes up that happens to use, spiritual or non-traditional ways of creating experiences and making money. But this is really, the people that have drawn here to me really shows that this place and this experience has some sort of higher, hats off to it. somebody from above is taking care of this place and looking after it and bringing the people in that make it the quality experience that it is. And there's, I can't see any other explanation than a little bit of divine assistance in that realm.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you on that. That kind of brings up another thing I was wanting to explore with you a little bit. People use the term, the plants want to expand, the plants want to spread, the plants want to get their word out. So this is like a couple different things. One direction I wanted to take it is what are you seeing as far as the expansion? We're going into the United States. We're definitely in Africa with ayahuasca. I don't know about India, China, Japan. There's a cultural context to the ceremonies that obviously comes from the heart of Amazonia. But already, I'm no expert, but I see that with some of the ceremonies taking place around LA, we have different types of music. I was at one where there's a didgeridoo being used from Australia. There was Mongolian throat singing. The heart of the guidance comes from the traditions, but there were other elements moving in. So that would be one part of it. And then the other part of it, when we talk about divinity, it was Dr. Jeff that had a really interesting little Facebook Live a couple weeks ago, and he talked about basically three types of perceptions of who or what the plant spirits actually are. One might say that the plant spirits have their own personality. They have their own intelligence that we interact with when we consume, almost like you might consider like a communion or sacrament. Others, another perspective, that not that any one is true or false, is that it functions as a bridge to divinity. So one might be talking to the goddess, the feminine energy supreme in the entire universe. I mean, many people report that, including me. That was the experience I had. I wanted to run by it. And then also, people will talk about a connection to our higher selves, so that maybe what we're communicating with is our oversoul, or that part of ourselves that is on sort of the branch of connection that goes up to other dimensions and goes up to divinity at some point, but we're really communicating with something that exists within us that we don't normally access. So you have any thoughts on, who it is, if I put it in the most simple form, who is it we're really talking to when we encounter this intelligence in the plants?
I get it. So when we say the plant wants to expand, the plant wants to create greater consciousness, you could easily just transfer the word plant, the word spirit. Spirit wants to expand. Spirit wants to create greater consciousness. You could use the universe. The universe wants to expand. The universe wants to. You could use the word God. God wants to expand. All this is the same concept. The plant is in the plant itself, and sort of the personification of the plant is Mother Ayahuasca and the grandmother. this, you know, this personage of wisdom and of great compassion and love is, you know, comes from the traditions where this was born, South and Central Americas. For millennia, people have been using, you know, shamans have been using this medicine as a connective element to our higher self, to spirit, to God. This is because it's a much more earth-based culture, you know, and as an earth-based culture, they relate to the plants, they relate to the animals, totem animals, you know, they relate to the physicality of the earth. You know, you go to, like, where I was a monk, which was a yogic order from India or the East, and it's much more of a, you know, there's a lot more, there's a different context to it. It's more celestial, you know, and much more about the gods and the, you know, the pantheon of all these different gods and such. Again, just ways to conceive of divine energy. And as my spiritual teacher would say, God or the universe or spirit will come to you in the form that is most dear or recognizable to you. So when people come here to Rythmia, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't have a spiritual path, so they naturally gravitate to this Mother Ayahuasca or this this idea of the grandmother. People who do, if they're Christian in their path, they may receive, you know, visions or insights through their Christian filter. So they may see Christ, or they may see Mother Mary, or who, you know, whoever is in their field. If it's somebody who's a Hindu or a Buddhist, you know, you might see Krishna, or you might see the Buddha, or some other form that is relatable to them, because that's already in their consciousness. So it's like a medium, you know. They often say God or spirit couldn't present itself to us in full form because it would just be too much for us to be able to take. So they come to us in forms that we're able to digest, essentially. And for this culture, it is the, you know, the plant as Mother Ayahuasca, the plant as the divine goddess, the plant as the grandmother who has the wisdom, the love, and the compassion for the world.
That makes a lot of sense. It's not really that different from what I learned in Sunday school. I mean, God knows all, and God knows you as an individual, and every person as an individual, and what it is we need. The difference here is that nobody's asking anybody to take anything on faith.
Right.
I'm saying believe this because it's in the Bible.
I'm saying that God is one specific type of God. You know, God is what he, she, it, the energy is to each individual. And it's not, you know, not circumscribed to any particular mentality of how it should be. And in fact, the ayahuasca experience pretty much blows that out of people's minds a lot of times, because it gives you a visceral experience of divinity that's a lot different from your textbook learning about what divinity is supposed to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, one thing I'm kind of curious about, so I'm kind of assuming that you probably, you know, have your finger on the pulse a little bit, being who you are, where you are, of what the bigger picture might be like, you know, worldwide. I can't say I know for a fact, but I've heard that in, say, San Francisco alone, there are about 200 ceremonies every weekend. That might even be higher now. I personally know of a number of, you know, very respectable facilitators in L.A., and I get emails all the time saying, hey, you want to join us 2 weeks from now, that sort of thing, New Year's Eve, whatever. Mm-hmm. So what are you seeing as far as sort of the big picture? Do you see the plants wanting to make a worldwide impact? Do you see people in other countries? I know we had people from Sweden, from England, from Ireland 2 weeks ago. Are you seeing an impact worldwide, or what does that look like to you from your standpoint as far as the bigger picture of what people are doing with plant ceremonies?
Well, taking a step back, even one step further to see the bigger picture, that the world is on an evolutionary upturn. So we are in a cycle, if you will, mm-hmm. that is an upward evolution. So spirit itself is calling from within people to become more known, to become more expressed, to become more embodied on this earthly physical plane. What form that takes is varied, and plant medicine is definitely one of the forms that it is taking to help bring about this evolution of consciousness and awareness. So indeed, we're seeing more awareness around plant medicine, more curiosity, more people trying it, and Rythmia definitely is a cornerstone in that movement. I really think that Rythmia isn't the originator of plant medicine, but it is a high profile entity, you know, a safe space on the planet that people can look to and feel comfortable with, understanding that, oh, there's places that honor this medicine with reverence and with safety and with comfort and all the things that I'm used to needing. So I think I can trust this now, you know, and so the plant medicine definitely is showing up all over the world. It's, you know, some people have been doing it, you know, like we said, the shamans have been doing it for millennia. So it's been around a heck of a long time. Many people have been doing it on individual levels well before Rythmia existed. Other people are starting to do this now that there's a wave catching on. You know, more people are cropping up. I would just caution people in choosing where to go or how to experience it with, you know, the statement you said earlier is that, you know, one or two off the cuff ayahuasca experiences won't necessarily produce lasting change or awarenesses in people. And indeed, a lot of times that's what you get. If you go to somebody who's doing it for the weekend, you might get two experiences and then you're thrust back out in the world. There is not a support network. There isn't a path an understanding of how you're supposed to manage yourself once you've, you know, it's like you've blown open your mind and now your reality shifted. How do you reintegrate back into what you used to know as the world with this whole new paradigm and framework in your mind? So it's important to understand that the experience itself is much greater than just experiencing the plant medicine in a ceremony night.
How do you see Rythmia taking part in this expansion? Is there sort of a future roadmap of maybe there being more Rythmias, or maybe, you know, introducing, you know, different types? Because I don't know Jerry personally, but from I've watched all of his stuff. I honor Jerry heavily for his, you know, applying his business experience to, you know, spiritual endeavor. And I get the feeling he's not a guy who sits still and creates, you know, something, oh, this is wonderful, now I'm going to rest on my laurels and this be it. I'm sure there have been conversations about where does Rythmia go next? What is the next maybe year or two look like for Rythmia, if you could give us maybe a little bit of a roadmap?
Well, let's just say there will be bigger Rythmia and there will be more Rythmias.
Great.
You know, what the timetable is largely up to the spirit and the plant is, you know, guiding. The unique aspect of this business and Jerry, who is a very astute businessman and indeed has made millions and millions of dollars with his business acumen, The difference here is now he's taking orders not from himself, which he has always done in the past, but he's taking orders from the moon. The moon and the plant medicine, you know, which projects the moon and gives him, you know, that's sort of his entity that helps to channel spirit to him. So he's literally following the guidance that is coming to him through plant medicine. And sometimes it's gone far against what his natural business sense would be. But he made a pact with the medicine since the beginning to follow it. If it told him something, that he would do it. And that this is how he's operating. So I think there's an indication that Rhythmia isn't a little lone entity to itself. It is going to propagate and grow just like the spores of a mushroom or the tendrils of a plant. You know, there's going to be more and more. And I personally think that Rhythmia really holds a unique place in this whole awakening movement, especially the awakening movement that utilizes plant medicine, because it is, once again, becoming a very visible, well-known, well-respected entity for introducing people to the idea of plant medicine. And, you know, when you're at the front of any kind of movement, people start to relate you to that, you know, to that greater movement. So I think Rhythmia really stands to be a household name for those households which understand plant medicine is in their future.
Well, it's already a household name amongst everybody I associate with here in LA. So we'll be back for sure, probably in the spring. I can't wait. It's kind of like going on the most, you know, beautiful place I've ever visited, and you can't wait to get back there. So Deb and I will definitely be back, and hopefully, you know, we can hang out with all of our people we consider our good friends there, and we will be bringing some of our friends. So, you've covered a lot. I really, really appreciate your time. This has just been a phenomenal conversation. So, honor you for everything you've shared here. Any closing words before we wrap up?
Well, just that, you know, to relate it all back to the breath, to say that, you know, ultimately, everything we talk to really comes down to a very personal experience. It's you, your mind, your consciousness, your spirit, and the breath is our unique gift for helping to unlock that consciousness. And so I'd encourage everybody to start experimenting with the breath, with experimenting with breath work, especially, you know, the type of breath work that we teach here at Rhythmia, to start getting in touch with their own experience. As similar as many people's experiences are, we're all on an individual path to our own awakening. And the breath is that one tool that you can take with you everywhere you go.
You don't even have to pack it in the suitcase. That's always
You don't need any props. You don't need any help. You almost don't need any place. You can do it walking. You can do it sitting down. You can do it lying down. You can do it exercising. At first, I recommend doing it lying down and really getting to know it. But the point is that this is the tool that you can start using right away to begin this journey, or to further this journey if you're already started somewhere along the line. And so I would encourage everybody to utilize that God-given tool that is available to us all.
I would certainly agree with you on that. My own experience completely supports that. And thanks a million, Christian, for being with us. And please give our love to all your colleagues there. And this has been great. Our week has been great. It's been wonderful talking to you. And I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Take care. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. Again, this is Rob Rowe of the Shapeshifting Reality Podcast. Also working with Debbie Dashinger of the Dare to Dream Podcast. This will appear both places. And if you like this conversation, please leave us a 5-star review, maybe throw a comment there under YouTube. All of these things help create visibility for this show and the ideas that we discuss here for the community at large. And we'd really appreciate that a lot. We are on Spreaker, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the usual places. So let's get the word out, guys, that we're really striving to do some good things, have some conversations with some brilliant people, and we really hope you enjoy it. And thank you very much for your support.
Welcome to What's Happening.
And What's Appening.
Oh, What's Happening, you ask? The $2 sausage McMuffin with egg
at McDonald's.
Ooh, so good.
Ooh, savory sausage, melty cheese.
And egg on a freshly toasted muffin.
For $2.
And What's Appening? The McDonald's app. Download it on your phone right now.
So you can get up on some exclusive deals only available on the McDonald's app.
Fist bump emoji out of here. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Prices at participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.